Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Red Friday in Kansas City. Alex Golden, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Video stream is up. Dusty on a Friday is still in the building. He should be out of here by now already. He's still over there. I'm like, why are you still here? Leave. You know, you should already be gone. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Leave?
He's hanging out over there. Leave. Distracting Drew.
Get out of here. You're not welcome here anymore.
Enjoy your weekend, Dusty.
And Rob Britton's here.
I know what's going on. This is weird. Max
My
over there
out
still.
The door by 2 o'clock.
We love you guys. We want to be here for you. Yeah. Cody's still hanging out on the Royals. Alex, you got the next 19 days off. You're like Carrington, basically.
Just next week.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Carrington isn't actually, in his fairness, he's not a 19 days off in a row guy. His days off make no sense. He'll just be off on like a Tuesday.
Oh, yeah,
Tuesday.
That's right. It's Cody who's the 19 day
He'll
guy.
Be off like a Tuesday in August. And he'll be like, what the hell? Where's Carrington? He's like, oh, he'll be back Thursday. And then he'll be gone the Wednesday 3 weeks from now.
What's he doing in Vegas? I never know.
Gambling, I guess.
I'll let his business be his business on that one.
What do you always take to Vegas when you go?
What?
What do you
Money.
Always,
cash.
What do you take to Vegas?
Myself.
And?
Myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you always took some protection.
Oh, always.
You
always.
Bring a gun to Vegas?
Yeah, Cody. Oh, my goodness.
Bring something for a gun.
Okay. Wow. There you go. Dusty's ready to start drinking for the rest of the day. I can just tell. He's got the Friday.
10 a.m. on a Friday?
I think so. I think he's heading to a bar in the next 30 minutes or so. I can kind of tell. Anyway, hope everybody's having a good start to their day. We're already off to a hell of a start. 913-586-7965, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Coming up a little bit later on today, it is a fan club Friday. We're going to have Haley Lewis joining us in studio. What's the drink today? Do we know?
Just canned drinks. Okay. Nothing too crazy. I didn't know how much you'd want to drink ahead of the holiday weekend for
Wait,
you.
Who's in studio?
Haley Lewis?
Who?
Okay. I don't know why.
Dusty, leave.
You know who she is.
Plus 610 today.
You need to leave. Go home. Get out of here. Dusty's just going to be like 20 minutes from now. He's going to randomly pop on the mic again.
I'll be honest. As soon as you said Haley Lewis, his ears perked up. His ears perked up.
Oh, my goodness.
Can't help himself. He'll be back at 1 o'clock. Dusty, he hasn't left yet, and he'll be back here at 1 o'clock having a drink with us.
So that's our guest today during Fan Club Friday. We also are going to have Josh Briscoe join us 1 hour from now, our Chiefs contributor for ChiefsOnSI.com. But let's start with the wide receivers heading into this one, because I think everybody acknowledged that DeAndre Hopkins' snap count was kind of a weird thing on Sunday against Buffalo, 47% of the snaps. And then you saw some numbers that were out there in terms of how effective the offense has been, of course, since he's joined. And I think some people would be out there and say, well, I don't even need numbers for that. Like, of course they've been better when DeAndre Hopkins is on the field.
Well, it seems obvious, and it is obvious, right? I don't think we need to, like, parse between, like, oh, really? I'm so shocked. Since they added DeAndre Hopkins, Patrick Mahomes' passer rating is 98.9. It ranks top six in the NFL. Without him, he had an 81.6 ranking. Fairly obvious numbers that you would expect out of there. But let me just tell you something. This is exactly why they got to find a way to get him on the field more. The rate in which he played in the last game is completely unacceptable. Below 50% of the snaps won't work because he does not have enough consistent wide receiver talent on the field if DeAndre Hopkins isn't on there. They're too predictable. They're too close to the line of scrimmage. Worthy's still a rookie. Whatever the things you want to factor into it, they have to have. Like, by the end of the season, I would like DeAndre Hopkins to be a 80% on the field guy. To this point, he's been like 60%. Last week, it was below 50%. And for the remaining weeks, as they continue to get him used to the offense, they have got to find a way to almost, not run him into the ground, but like, he has got to play way more. He's got to be way more involved in the offense. And for a player like Kelce, that they've always done a good job just like making sure he got the ball in some facet, I'd start doing that with D-Hop. You know that, like, he hasn't had a touch in the first quarter, so you know the first drive, the ball's going to DeAndre Hopkins no matter what? More of that. He's too important the rest of the way.
The playoffs are where we're going to see him ultimately have that much higher snap count. I still think on Sunday, the one thing we have to factor into anybody, whether it's, you know, if Pacheco plays, whether it's Pacheco, Kareem Hunt, DeAndre Hopkins in this conversation, knowing that there's a short week ahead and the opponent, if this thing in the second half is out of hand and the Chiefs are not in a dogfight with the Carolina Panthers on Sunday, I think we shouldn't expect 80% of the snaps from DeAndre Hopkins on Sunday. Like, I actually would be surprised at this point. Do I think it'll be more than 47%? Probably.
It's not going to be 80%, but I'd like to get it there.
But it depends on how the second half is going. You know, if they are actually up, fortunately, by two touchdowns or 17 points, and it's the fourth quarter, at that point, I would say, why would I want DeAndre Hopkins getting any touches? Why even risk that? You know, still remember, he is still, in wide receiver terms, an older wide receiver. I want to make sure that he's healthy, that he's still fresh and all of that. But of course, they're better when DeAndre Hopkins is involved. I mean, we saw the impact that he had immediately for this football team. But let's not, you know, the texter, I get your point. I don't think he's not playing with a torn MCL. He had a MCL issue earlier on in the season. That is true.
And I know that they're trying to, like, it's about the long game and all this, but 47% of the snaps. Like, if he played 60% of the snaps, I think the Chiefs have a 5-10% better chance to win. Like it's that significant for their offense, because the rest of the wide receivers, just as a quick reminder, are Justin Watson and Juju Smith-Schuster, who'd been hurt for the last month, and a rookie in Xavier Worthy. They have no person I could consistently tell you I'm sure could be open on any play except DeAndre Hopkins. And Xavier Worthy, I'm getting to the point where I think he might be consistently open. I just don't know whether or not it's going to be complete or not. So, like, it becomes vital, because what I think has happened here, and what I mentioned, like, yesterday with the vanilla part of the offense is that I think they've turned to relying too much on this, like, Travis Kelce, double tight end, tight formation, we'll just send out all those guys to receive coverages, and instead need to go back to believing in their wide receiver unit to the best of their ability. I understand, maybe in Christmas Day or whatever, maybe we'll get Hollywood back and that'll change the math a little bit, or maybe it's a slow buildup. But you get the point of where they are. Remember, he's just too important.
The high watermark, though, for D-Hop in a Chiefs uniform was the overtime game against Tampa. That was 9 targets, 8 catches, 86. Then against Denver, when the offense overall was not as effective, 5 targets, 4 catches, 56. And then last week in 47% of the snaps, 3 catches for 29 yards. So it's, I mean, the Tampa game, are we going to see an 8 catch or 9 target performance against Carolina? I would be surprised. I think it's more fitting that it'll be closer to the Denver game, where he has 4 or 5 catches max in this football game on Sunday.
Is over under is like 48, 49 and a half. He is their only single reliable receiver right now. I guess part of this depends on what you think of Juju Smith-Schuster. I didn't want to, even after that game, get too carried away with Juju Smith-Schuster's performance. He had that one game where you're like, oh, look who's turning back the clock. They're finding Juju on the street, Kareem Hunt on the street, and these guys are pulling off massive upsets. But he couldn't even stay healthy after they used him too much one game, and then he wore down. You think that's factoring into the DeAndre Hopkins stuff? Like, we overused Juju Smith-Schuster one time, and then that man couldn't walk for a month. So then we had to, like, cool it for a little bit just to come back around. If that's the argument, if it's just simply to keep DeAndre Hopkins healthy, I'll listen. But I still think that the key to all the health and all this other stuff we're talking about is the bye week.
Sure.
So, like, but I think you have to buy some now. You got to make sure you win some now in order to do it. It's harder in this Panthers game.
Yeah, this is
the argument is, like, if this opponent is the one, maybe not. Maybe I needed to make this point or a stronger argument for this point next Wednesday before they take on the Raiders, or even more so a week after that.
Chargers.
Before they take on the Chargers. Speaking of the Chargers, by the way, they are the first Thursday night flex. Adam Schefter said the Week 16 game between the Broncos and the Chargers will now be on Thursday night football. So on Prime, the Browns-Bengals game got moved to Sunday.
As it should. And what week? You said what week is that again?
16.
Week 16. Okay. Why not? Both of those teams are going to have a chance to be maybe clinching a playoff spot at that point in time or knocking one of the other out. And the way both teams are playing, absolutely. And Harbaugh right now and what, you know, the attention that they're continuing to get, the Chargers are going to be a team that I think people, more and more people are interested in as the season continues. And the same could be said for Bo Nix based on his performance. So, yeah, that's a good this is why flexing exists for matchups like that.
I will say for the Chargers now, it creates the exact same logjam that the Chiefs are just getting ready to go through. They will take on the Chiefs on the road on December 8th. They will then a week later take on the Bucs on December 15th. And then have a short turnaround to the Broncos on Thursday night football versus three consecutive normal week schedules. That particular stretch run of three games in like 12 days, including Chiefs, Bucks, and Broncos, and a short week Broncos, that's kind of tough for the Chargers, which is good for the Chiefs, obviously. I'm not like, I don't care if they have to play a tough schedule. It's good for them.
Do you agree with this text? I'm curious if you guys do or not. 913-586-7965. Someone from the 660 says, we have an offensive coordinator problem, not a wide receiver problem. And they referenced a couple stats in regards to Eric Bieniemy versus Matt Nagy. I've been consistent on this, whether it was Eric Bieniemy as the OC or now with Matt Nagy. Andy Reid's calling the plays. This is his offense. So I just typically, you can obviously disagree with me, but I tend to myself disagree with this notion of like it's an offensive coordinator problem. Just like any blame that EB got was ridiculous because it's Andy Reid's offense. He's the one
or
calling
lack
the plays.
Of credit, really, he got.
Or credit at times. Same thing applies here. So, no, I do not think, and I understand people can take numbers and move them around however they would like to fit their point. When you're going to say, here's what the offensive numbers were with EB versus Nagy, are we also factoring in that wide receiver number one and number two are out? Are we also factoring in other aspects to what has gone on with the football team during that stretch?
Do you think that there's a, I don't want to say, not a culture problem, but like an accountability problem with Matt Nagy compared to Eric Bieniemy, where...
Who do you think's not being held accountable?
Well, I'm just saying in terms of, like, maybe we don't see it publicly, and maybe that's why people have this deal, but you don't see, like, Kingsley having his problems. It's like everything's fine, and you just deal with it, and it's whatever, instead of, like, we don't see Patrick Mahomes getting up in some, not that we need Mahomes to do it, but EB would get up, EB be like, hey, man, you need to figure this thing out, dude. Like,
they benched him in the middle of a game, and healthy scratch the next week.
I know, but I don't know.
He's saying there's not someone to kick you in the ass.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know if that's Nagy, I don't know if that's what people think that there's missing in regards to the wide receiver issue or whatnot is, you know what, it's okay, we're going to figure it out, it's fine. Instead of you need to get your you-know-what together because we're going to lose this game if you don't. Like, I don't know if that's what people are missing in a way.
Do you want to know the truth? I think that if you had given me the choice in the peak of their powers, would I choose? I think Bieniemy was better at being collaborative in the sense that I think he was coming up with more creative things that worked than Nagy, but I think that that's a small percentage of what the offense's overall effectiveness is. I think sometimes we overcomplicate. Do you want to know what the simple difference is? Talent. During the runs in which 2018, 2019, 2020, and Eric Bieniemy was the offensive coordinator, and this was the league's number one offense in the league, I want to remind you that their left tackle was Eric Fisher, who we all agree is better than their left tackle situation now. Their right tackle was Mitchell Schwartz, maybe a future Hall of Famer at that position. And their wide receiver was Tyreek Hill, a future Hall of Famer. Travis Kelce turned back the clock 3 or 4 years, depending on the year you're doing it. I just think there's a talent disparity.
Yeah, I
think there was more talent on those teams on offense than there are in these teams on offense. Yeah, that's what I think is the bigger factor.
Yeah, this very conversation is one we've had, I don't know, three times in the last 2 years. We certainly had it last year, and people want to put blame when all of a sudden the offense isn't as effective on certain individuals, and that's the name of the game. I think ultimately it's a fair point, Drew, about like, hey, do they have kind of the the hothead, if you will, that's going to hold people accountable. My only if you want to use them for wide receivers, I guess. But again, I would say number one wide receiver, number two wide receiver are out for this potentially for the season.
Of course.
And the Kingsley thing is like, look, if the Chiefs thought it was as simple as just yelling at Kingsley to fix the problems, they would have done that. He just is not ready to play in the National Football League.
It doesn't even need to be Kingsley, though, because
that was the example you used. I'm just saying.
It doesn't even need to be Kingsley because there have been times when Juwan, like,
I don't buy that Matt Nagy doesn't hold people accountable.
I understand, I think people would, and we had this conversation last year. I think people would like to see whether it's Patrick Mahomes or somebody get mad on the sideline at somebody and just be like, you need to wake up because we're struggling.
Sure, but can I just, here's the problem, Drew. There is a massive flaw in this logic, which is despite nobody holding any, you know, like, let's just say you believe that, right? And nobody's being held accountable and they need an ass whip to put all these guys in their place and teach them how to be pros.
You don't need to go too far, though.
I know, but they have won the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. That is the single biggest flaw to this, is despite apparently not having an Eric Bieniemy type, if you subscribe to that logic, it hasn't mattered. Like, it just straight up hasn't made a difference in them reaching their goals at the end of the year. If you're saying they're complacent because they've won two Super Bowls in a row, I'd actually hear that argument more. But like, in a lot of ways, this is the problem with a lot of working theories on like the coordinator position, is they won Super Bowl with Eric Bieniemy, but they've continued to win Super Bowls with Matt Nagy. So it's like, he's not holding them back that bad. Right. Or like, he's, you know, like, I just think it's usually this is like, if things go wrong, like let's say if your board starts breaking or your car starts acting weird.
Sure.
Typically, in almost all cases, I would tell you, find the simplest solution first. And the simplest solution is, if you made me compare side by side the talent on offense, on the offensive line, at running back, and in the wide receiver room between the two teams, we would all take the 2019 offensive talent. We would all take the 2018.
Of course, it was a younger Travis Kelce as well.
Yeah.
Their tackle play was better. Let's be honest, Patrick Mahomes' footwork and play was better. You know, at some point, like sometimes we don't want to discuss that. The personnel and the players also are not playing at a high level. And I just think fundamentally with the way this regime has operated, we know who is calling the plays. And I know someone texted and said, "What do you really think that he's calling 100% of the plays?" On game day, I do. Now, during the week, is whether it was EB or Matt Nagy, are they working on the game plan together? Are they collaborating? Of course, 100%, exactly what they do during the week. And does it mean that in game, in a certain situation, if they call a timeout, that Nagy's not involved in those conversations with Andy? Of course they are. But if you're asking who is calling the play, like if you're unhappy with the play calling, that is Andy Reid. That is not on the offensive coordinator.
He'll lie to you every year and be like, "Well, I let Nagy call those good ones," and that's a lie.
Right.
And he'll say, "I called the bad ones." It's like, it's never the truth.
And somebody said, "Well, then why do they even have an offensive coordinator?" Well, that's just the way this thing works. I'll use Drew's Cincinnati example. Like, Zach Taylor's the head coach in Cincy. He calls the plays, but his offensive coordinator was Brian Callahan, who's now the head coach in Tennessee.
Correct.
This is not like this. It's really not this crazy. If your head coach is an offensive mind, sometimes he calls the plays, not always, but whether he's calling the plays or not, he still has an offensive coordinator. It's not this crazy thing.
Right. So what you're saying, Cody, because I think I agree with you, is you're saying until they have a whole healthy wide receiver room and they got the talent there, like next year, Rasheed's back, say they bring back D-Hop, they got Xavier Worthy or whatever, you're not willing to say it's an offensive coordinator problem until all of the talent is there in the room. And if they still look the way that they do this year, or last year.
They've had massive tackle problems and lost their number one, number two wide receiver, and number one running back. Like, am I really going to be like, "Nagy, why didn't you keep those guys healthy? Should have got him in the weight room, in the offseat," whatever, right? I mean, it's just really, really, really hard to make that argument on my end. Meanwhile, last night, Chiefs got a huge favor. The Cleveland Browns and the hero that is Jameis Winston. And I just like to quickly say, I'm thankful. You know, when you say, like, this is your last day before Thanksgiving, so I can't do this with you next week. You know one thing I'm thankful for this year?
Okay.
I'm thankful that I live in a time in which Jameis Winston plays football in the NFL. Because, to be honest, a delight. A delight. Does he always win? No. Is he a delightful human being who I enjoy watch do the ridiculous things he does? Absolutely. But first things first, Chiefs got a huge favor last night. If you were at some point fearful that there was a third team in the mix for the number one seed along with the Bills and you, they're right.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, Pittsburgh. Yeah. I've eliminated them from number one seed contention. I'm assuming you have too.
Absolutely. We all kind of thought it was a two-horse race anyway, but now it becomes pretty evident in some of the odds and the math on the win-loss records will tell you that's where this thing is headed. It's a Chiefs-Bills conversation only. The updated odds as of this morning, Kansas City minus 190 to be the number one seed. The Bills are plus 200, so 2-1. Pittsburgh was 9-1 to be the number one seed before last night's game. They fell all the way back to 24-1. It's over. It's over for Pittsburgh as a number one seed. And it's one game. It's one performance. I don't think Pittsburgh stinks now, but wasn't last night's performance exactly why we can see them winning a game, but not multiple games? Because yes. When you still struggle the way they do on offense, and until it was a Jaylen Warren touchdown when they had to have it, they had gone seven quarters without an offensive touchdown. Mike Williams, yes, the Mike Williams that got traded from the Jets to the Steelers, had a touchdown, you know, at this point, eight quarters ago, and that was their last touchdown. And they finally got a touchdown yesterday in the second half. They cannot win consecutive games in the playoffs just kicking field goals. I know they can win a game. They beat Baltimore last week only kicking field goals. They can do it. They cannot win multiple games just kicking field goals, no matter how great their defense is. And then we found out last night, yeah, it was a short week and everything. And look, I thought Pittsburgh was going to win. I was wrong. But T.J. Watt was neutralized. That was what was impressive about what Cleveland mm-hmm. did. T.J. Watt was a non-factor last night in that game. And when
maybe
that
it was
happens,
the weather.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, well, T.J. Watt's played and had great games in the snow before. I don't know.
Like, it is harder to get your footing and get that jump,
sure.
You know?
But, I mean, look, give Jameis and the Browns credit and for what they were able to do. They were clearly motivated despite being a two-win football team. That's impressive. That says a lot, I think, about Kevin Stefanski and what he's been able to build there despite not having the record this year, although I'll put a lot of that on the whole Deshaun Watson mess. That was a game in which the Steelers showed us that, okay, yeah, they can win a wild card. They'll win a wild card weekend game, maybe. Maybe they win the division still, and so they're hosting the Broncos. That'll be a dogfight. If it's Broncos Steelers wild card weekend, I know that typically wouldn't excite you.
15-12 or something.
But Bo Nix can win that game.
Yeah, I think so. I think they can win a game in the playoffs. I just don't think they can win games, plural.
Mike Tomlin's a great coach. I thought he was terrible last night. I just thought he was off.
Timeouts were really bad.
Timeouts were questionable. Then they have a 3rd and 4. And they're basically a first down away from icing it. And they put in Justin Fields, who they had. That's a normal thing they have done. They did run him, and it failed on multiple fourth downs throughout the game. But it's 3rd and 4, and they haven't passed the ball. In fairness to Fields, it was actually a decent pass down to George Pickens. It was incomplete. But why are you throwing on 3rd and 4 with your backup quarterback when you're a first down away from really maybe icing the game?
So Russell Wilson made some clutch throws in that game. Take it. Like, this is the whole thing. It's like the college quarterback thing. I understand. Like, if you think that Justin Fields gives you a better chance to win in the snow, well, then you should just play the whole second half or whatever. But if you went to Russell Wilson, then he's got to be your guy on 3rd and 4. If it's 4th and 1 and you're thinking QB sneak, speed option, those things, I actually will kind of entertain the usage a little bit. I think they thought they had an advantage in the snow. But yeah, that was not Mike Tomlin's best day. I still think he's a great coach, but I do not think he did a good job last night. And their whole thing is like, here's the problem for the Steelers too is, in the long run, what is your plan here? You got Russell Wilson on a 1-year deal for like peanuts, $10,000 or something, right? And at the end of the season, if you think Russell Wilson can still win football games for you, he's not going to be cheap anymore, which means this whole plan of we'll build around Russ while he costs 2 nickels rubbed together doesn't work. He'll cost $30 million if someone's going to make him a starter. He'll be below the market value that is the elite level guys, but he's still going to cost an absolute fortune. Thank you, Browns, though. I will say, if there was a, you know, like, if there was a scale in the world and we judged everyone on a likability index, with 0 being, like, monster, right? dictator who, like, murdered people. And okay. 100 being, like, the nicest person you've ever met. I'm not sure two people have ever been further on the spectrum of the likability index of Deshaun Watson and Jameis Winston. Like, I mean, my God. There's a massive difference in likability between those two humans, right?
Sure. I mean, yes, for a variety of reasons. Jameis also is just he's himself, right? People appreciate people that are just authentic and are who they are. And that's definitely Jameis. Listen to him in postgame on Prime last night.
It really was amazing. Like, I was just praying on the sideline because that fourth quarter, it really was like it was a whole paradigm shift. Like, we were playing so well offensively, and then bang, bang, back-to-back drives with turnovers, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, this is really an NFL's film moment. The snow starts pouring down. It starts getting like my feet started getting heavy because I'm squishing through the snow. And, man, it was so good. And it was so great to end up getting that win.
I love it. God, and
then
I love it.
Then he also went and did snow angels on the field with the Amazon Prime crew after the game and was throwing snowballs at Tony Gonzalez.
Talking about snow.
And talking about eating snow. Also, they asked him, like, how I think Fitzpatrick asked him how the LASIK is going. And he said, it was nice to see a win. Just unbelievable stuff. I mean, just incredible stuff.
I wish he'd be the backup here. He likes to go back up places where he might actually get on the field, but man, I want Jameis here. He's so fun.
Yeah.
He's such a likable dude. I still can't believe
that game was the full Jameis experience because
he's throwing like crazy picks and making great throws. It made no sense. Also, I mean, I will say, like, I'm assuming the weather played some factor in the ugliness of that game, but that's also the way it works. There's always like three national people be like, football in the elements are stupid. I'm like, you're wrong.
That was awesome last night.
You were wrong about
it. I'm glad
this.
I was at home and in a nice warm building instead of out in the stands, but it was beautiful to watch.
I don't care how ugly the football gets. Watching people play and like just pouring snow is incredible. It's great entertainment. I was like, I had no plans to like watch a ton of that game. The second it starts pouring snow in the second half in a close game, I'm locked in. I'm locked into Steelers Browns. That game had everything.
It did. It was neat to see just the entire environment for that game.
I was just looking back at the only other thing I guess that stood out from that game real quick was, I mean, it is one thing to have talent, which George Pickens clearly had. I mean, can he just like
that's why the Chiefs didn't draft him. That last night is the perfect example why he was not drafted by the Chiefs.
Stay out of his own way. He was getting in fights with corners in the middle of the Hail Mary. He could have maybe hypothetically helped catch that pass.
He had to be restrained after the game, after the last play on the Hail Mary.
Yeah, there was a moment when it was just him and Gary Newsom up against the wall.
And then he blamed the weather and the refs at the end of it. Like, that man's never taken accountability for anything in his life, I don't think.
He said, Cleveland, Cleveland's not a good team. They just beat you, man. You can't be saying that right after the game publicly. Like, we don't think they're any good.
The weather conditions helped them out a little bit.
Sure, but like I don't know. This goes back to like the Chiefs. Maybe this goes back to like the loser mentality in my mind. Like the Chiefs Super Bowl against the Eagles when they're like, well, that field was nuts. We couldn't keep our footing. I'm like, I'm sorry. Do you think you were the only team running on that field? Just real quick. Did the Chiefs also play on that field? Did the Browns also have to play in the snow gold? Did they also had to play in that? They didn't just get to play on a field with no snow. I don't care. See, it's bad for both.
Also, for a game in the blizzard in the fourth quarter, they scored, 27 points combined?
Man, if you had the under, you must have been sick.
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
Did you have the under?
I did, thank you.
At one point, it was 28.
My bad. I didn't know.
Thank you.
At one point, it was 28 and a half points. What was the over-under at one point live betting?
Pre-game, it was 36 and a half, and it was definitely trending to go under. And then once the snow picked up, you would have thought, oh, now there's going to be really.
This under's great.
Nope. Again, that's why usually it's not this. It's the wind that usually impacts that stuff, not the actual precipitation. But it did not. It did not play a role as much as people thought it would. All right. Up next, we'll talk about one thing you don't think has been a problem for this football team and another sign you think that baseball could be broken. We'll explain that next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Next. A little bit of breaking news in the NFL in the last, I don't know, 60 seconds or so. Adam Schefter reporting the Giants are releasing quarterback Daniel Jones.
What?
Yeah, just flat out releasing him. Remember, he was already benched. He was going to be the team's third string quarterback behind Drew Lock and Tommy DeVito.
They made him play scouts team safety yesterday.
He spoke yesterday, released a statement, very classy statement to the media, explaining the situation, understanding the situation. Remember, there's injury guarantees and why they didn't want to play him, because potentially if he got hurt or whatever, they could be on the hook for more money. And so his time in New York was already over, but we all assume, oh, at the end of the season. Sounds like, according to Jordan Schultz and his reporting, that Jones asked for his release and all sides are moving on. And that's that. Like, Daniel Jones is officially cut by the New York Giants. And I guess it just prevents having any distraction. Here's the statement from Giants president John Mara on Daniel Jones. Quote, Daniel came to see me this morning and asked if we would release him. We mutually agreed that would be the best for him and for the team. Daniel's been a great representative of our organization, first class in every way. His handling of this situation yesterday exemplifies just that. We are all disappointed in how things have worked out. We hold Daniel in high regard and have a great appreciation for him. We wish him nothing but the best in the future. I think what happened is yesterday at practice and just how embarrassing and awkward it was to have him playing safety and as like the fourth stringer, basically. And just like, and the fact that he didn't throw the organization under the bus in his statement that he put out.
He said he didn't do enough.
And he took, you know, blame for the situation as well and handled it in a very, very classy way. Maybe that's why they were able to do this today versus having him sit around for the final 7 weeks, having to be in that position. Just let the guy be out of there. You're going to pay him either way.
I'm guessing he's just done for the rest of the year and looks for a team to pick up with. Cause like, I don't know why you'd bring in Daniel Jones at this point, unless, you know, like if the Cowboys were 500, I would maybe make the argument, right? Like, and maybe they would be less likely to cut him if that was the case. Just, but
how quickly things shifted. 2 years ago, they signed him to a four-year, $160 million
deal. It was a bad deal.
Now he's getting cut in the middle of the season.
I guess what surprised me about this is I don't recall a quarterback getting cut in the middle of the season like this who got benched as the starter. I don't remember a team just like letting a quarterback go and being like, well, you asked to leave, so we'll see you later week 12 of the season.
Look at the last 2 years. There's been a couple examples of the same situation, but yeah, the quarterback didn't get released. Last year, Russell Wilson, they benched him for injury guarantee reasons, right? And ultimately, they cut him at the end of the year. I think they could have done this same thing if they wanted. Go back even further. Derek Carr, he got benched for Aiden O'Connell at the time a few years ago before he signed with the Saints in the offseason. But they benched him because of the financial injury guarantee thing as well.
Yeah.
So this is unique. I actually think they're doing Daniel Jones in a weird, at this time, a favor that they could just have him sit around the rest of the season and just make it awkward for everybody. Instead, it's just, let's just be done with this. Let him move on.
I mean, I guess. I mean, it's just like...
Do you think he ever starts in the NFL again?
Yes. Like, for the same reason, like, Jameis started a game last night. Daniel Jones, like, if you told me, like, Carson Wentz is on a one-year deal. If you told me next year Daniel Jones was the backup for the Chiefs, fine. He's an NFL starter with, like, 40 games of starting experience. If he's the backup to Mahomes, cool.
Doesn't this have Sean McVay written all over it?
Maybe.
That, much like they signed Baker Mayfield, doesn't this have Sean McVay and the Rams all written all over this, where Daniel Jones ends up either backing up Stafford the rest of this year or just next year, Daniel Jones competing for a starting job if Stafford retires or something like that in L.A.? I could see Sean McVay saying, all right, we'll take a flyer on this kid. This is, add him to the list, though, in the offseason, depending on how the season ends for the Panthers with Bryce Young, you could have teams looking at Bryce Young and Daniel Jones, and like these are, you know, other former top picks that all could be available. Bryce Young would require a trade. Daniel Jones is now a free agent.
I would assume both of those guys will get another chance to start because Daniel Jones played well enough that at least one NFL team decided to give him $160 million. As a full-time chosen starter out of camp, no gold. Do I think he'll start a NFL game for a team? Yeah. He's the perfect... We just drafted a young quarterback like Anthony Richardson. We just want a veteran backup. The rookie's starting, but the vet is there. And oh no, he twisted his ankle. Daniel Jones starts for a week. He'll start like 10 more games in his NFL career, but other than that, he'll be a career backup. His athleticism alone will keep him at least somewhat employed for a while.
I tend to agree. If we're just going for pure entertainment, selfishly for those of us around the Thanksgiving holiday, because the Giants play the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, you said, hey, the Cowboys, it would be incredible if the Cowboys said, you know what? We want it. Jerry Jones, I'm an entertainer. He's basically like, he treats the Cowboys like it's the Barnum Bailey Circus, okay? So it would be great if Jerry Jones said, you know what? I want even more eyeballs on my crappy football team on Thanksgiving. We're playing the Giants. We're signing Daniel Jones. It's going to be Daniel Jones versus Tommy DeVito on Thanksgiving, 3 o'clock. Let's go. That would be incredible.
Please. You know what? Actually, you're right. Sports are supposed to be fun. I'm here for the entertainment. That is the only way I am interested in watching. Come on, man. We don't want to watch that game. Nobody wants to watch that game. Nobody wants to watch Tommy DeVito versus Cooper Rush. But if you tell me all of a sudden it's Tommy DeVito and Daniel Jones gets to stick the knife back in his old team. Okay, hold on. A little juice here. A little revenge element. I am interested.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
The Cowboys want to lose.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, but it would be incredible theater.
I guess a lot of this, every time... every year we're just constantly reminded of it, so I should probably just never be surprised anymore. There are so many poorly run sports franchises in this world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's shocking how bad they are at running their business. Like, it almost feels like you couldn't do worse if you tried at running it sometimes. And the Giants and the Jets have been the front runners of that for the last 15 years. But you mentioned the Panthers and what they've done with Bryce Young and their terrible owner. I mean, it's like, whew. Man, you guys are really working against your own product in a lot of ways in this case. I just don't remember a starting NFL quarterback, specifically one who got a contract 2 years ago, getting cut in the middle of the season. Like, for instance, Russell Wilson got benched in the middle of the season for the non-injury guarantee. Sean Payton, I'm pretty sure, hates his guts. Like, they very clearly did not like each other, and he definitely didn't want to miss his quarterback. He was still on the roster. I mean, he made it the rest of the – they might have traded him for peanuts, but he was on the roster the rest of the season. Well, I guess he was just cut. He was on the roster the rest of the year. He didn't just become a free agent, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what makes this different again today. We already knew he was benched. We already knew they were going to move on from Daniel Jones. The news, if you're just joining us in the last 10 minutes, is that Daniel Jones has flat out been cut by the Giants, mutually agreed to do this. And based on the Giants' statement, Daniel Jones asked for his release this morning, and they obliged.
If you were a playoff team and you lost your quarterback tomorrow, would you go with Daniel Jones versus just like the backups who've been sitting around? Maybe it depends on the team. Like in this case, they just go Carson Wentz.
Yeah, he doesn't know your offense at all, so no.
Okay, I just didn't know. Depending on the team. Like
Daniel Jones stinks, so.
But if Justin Herbert went down, he's definitely better than Easton Stick.
I think so.
You think so?
He doesn't know the offense.
He's better than
not in the middle of the season without only the offense.
I don't know, man.
If Lamar Jackson went down, did they still have Tyler Huntley? I don't think so. He's on the
Snoop
Dolphins. Correct?
Huntley's down in Miami.
I don't know who the backup is for Baltimore.
I don't have any idea. Is it like a veteran?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Like my, if it's my just only some point dude I've never heard.
My only point on the Daniel Jones thing: if all of a sudden he hopped in the week
Josh Johnson,
there you go. The week before the playoffs, he doesn't know your offense. That's what I'm alluding to. At some point, if you don't know the offense,
you're saying if somebody brings him in who's in a position maybe to make the playoffs, then you do it now.
Yeah,
correct.
Just kind of creates an interesting issue, I guess.
It definitely does. Hey, coming up in 20 minutes, Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor for Chiefs on SI, is going to join us. We'll talk more Chiefs Panthers in particular, and also maybe see if he agrees with you. And I tend to agree with you about the offensive line situation. Is it that one player is getting so much attention that the other's problems aren't being viewed, or is that other player actually playing good football?
I decided to actually look at it because I see Juwan Taylor's, like, nobody says his name because they're worried about left tackle more until he gets his holding penalty or gets his little false start or whatever, or the complaining fans on Twitter, like, he false starts every time and they never call it for other organizations. But I decided to really look at Juwan Taylor's advanced stats, and I'm not going to bore you with him, to see if he's playing good football or if he's playing bad football or if he's part of the problems that exist in the offensive line. And very simply put, it's not a problem. Juwan Taylor is not the problem of the offense. And I just want to make that very clear now for if he becomes the next scapegoat for where their problems are. He's not an issue. He is playing perfectly above average tackle by NFL standards. Is he playing top five left tackle, top five tackle in the league? No. But if you lump in all the left tackles, all the right tackles in the league, he's playing as good as football as like Joe Alt or Ronnie Stanley, or some of the other guys who you would not be complaining about the job that they're doing. And the penalties have reduced. He's still one of the most penalized guys in the league, but not like last year. So if he false starts on some and they don't call him, you shouldn't care as a Chiefs fan, because they're not calling him nearly as often. I'm just saying he's not the problem. Left tackle is a problem. That's a big part of the problem on offense. Right tackle is not an issue. It's not the tackles. I'm not going to refer to it that way anymore. It's left tackle.
Juwan Taylor's been fine. I think if we're looking at the exact dollar amount and what you're getting from it, you would still say they're not getting the most bang for their buck at right tackle, but it there's nothing you can do at this point. It's already locked in for next year. It is what it is. He's not a liability, but I don't know if you're getting your money's worth necessarily at right tackle. I think that's how I would view it. I also think
so you pay for a free agent right tackle.
Sure, exactly. And the dollar amount is the dollar amount. I'll give credit to Sam McDowell though over at the Star. This was 2 weeks ago. He wrote a column. He was talking about this kind of this conversation about the offensive line. I'm with you on Juwan Taylor. I'm also with you, of course, about left tackle. I've been very vocal about. I don't know why the hell Donovan Smith is not on this football team backing up Wanya Morris.
There's another free agent left tackle right now. The Cardinals Pro Bowl guy from 2 years ago is a free agent. Is available.
Apparently. However, Sam McDowell points out that this might stun you, and I was stunned when I saw
the pressure rates.
Mahomes is on pace to face the fewest total pressures he's seen since 2019. I'll say that again. This was from McDowell. Mahomes is on pace to face the fewest total pressures he's seen since 2019, and that's with over a third of them being effectively, you know, charged to the left tackle, to Wanya Morris or Kingsley, whoever was in at the time. So that's what's kind of unique is, like, we all think this is like the worst we've ever. No, he's actually getting pressured less. I still think there's a trust issue that he has clearly on his blind side with the left tackle.
Like, but I think he's getting happy feet.
But it's not just the issues when we were discussing Mahomes or the offense. Yeah, the O-line is part of the equation. Left tackle, absolutely part of the equation. But it is definitely not all about that. There's either still the problem that, hey, your number one, number two wide receiver have been out all year. It's also that Mahomes' footwork has regressed a little bit, and it's got to get sorted out by the time the playoffs happen, which is what happened last year. But this thought that, oh, left tackle, it's never been worse. Pressure-wise, I know it
it's not true.
Pressure-wise, it's not true, yeah.
So I guess that, like, some of this, though, is the... But we all agree, man, on the eye test. The offensive line's not perfect. Like, I mean, because, like, there's, like, a factor in this, too, or it seems like when they're getting the pressure is coming at an inconvenient time. This all comes back to the same thing, though, which is I do think, given more time, Wanya will get a little better, but I can't believe they haven't brought in a left tackle. I can't believe it. Like, Arizona, like, and I mentioned this name just because I think any left tackle is of note. It's no different than what we've talked about before, Donovan Smith being available or David Bakhtiari or whatever, but former Arizona Cardinals Pro Bowl left tackle DJ Humphreys, who did have an ACL injury last year, has been medically cleared to play, according to Ian Rappaport. He started 15 games last year. He started only 8 the year before that, but then 16 three consecutive years before that. So, I mean, for the most part, this isn't available. Well,
the names are out there. They're obvious to back up one.
There's like million
Bakhtiari,
choices.
Humphreys, and Donovan Smith.
So just
Donovan Smith still makes the most sense because he played left tackle on a team that won the Super Bowl last year. That team would be, of course, Kansas City. So I know he
it's
knows
like bringing
this
in Mecole Hardman or when they brought back, you know, like every running back. Like, it's fine. Just bring back the people you're comfortable with. That doesn't bother me, but bring in somebody. Bring in somebody. Because right tackle, I don't think it's a problem. Is it perfect? Is it without flaw? No, come on. He's not Trent Williams. Like, and yeah, if you wanted to just talk like bang for your buck, dollar for cents, they got better value deals somewhere on the line, right? Or somewhere on this roster. I'm not arguing that. I'm just telling you he's not part of the problem. He's a perfectly fine right tackle. He's doing his job effectively. Every other metric would suggest he's doing just fine. Absent he needs to maybe get called for one or two less holding calls across the way. There was one other thing that stood out yesterday, and I know people, I'm sure we're going to get made fun of nationally because of...
Oh boy. One, because what are you about to say?
People are going
to
make fun of the Royals because last night there was a report. The Royals made a quick call on Juan Soto. And the report suggested,
like, just
the
to call say just quick. To say hello or what? Just to say hey.
Ask
what?
Him what his plans for How's Thanksgiving were. Do I think it was ever realistic that the Royals would sign Juan Soto? Absolutely not. Do I like that a team, even if they think that they're completely out of the ballpark, isn't afraid to pick up an embarrassing phone call? I do like that, actually. I think it shows a little, like, you're not too embarrassed to at least ask. All right, so they asked on Juan Soto. Is that going to happen? No. But I want to make one thing. It would be better for baseball if he was a Kansas City Royal, even at his kind. It would be way better for baseball because if he ends up as a Los Angeles Dodger, this sport is broken. Unfixably broken. I can't. It is. It would be offensive if one team in baseball could spend $2 billion on two players when the Royals' payroll is like $130 million. If he ends up on a Dodger, then just fold this whole sport up. It's nuts. Anybody, even the Yankees, is better than that. Don't let him be a Dodger. Well, Shohei Ohtani makes 16 cents next year because apparently he's already so rich, he doesn't even need to be paid for the next 40 years. It's crazy. Don't let him be a Dodger. Anything but a Dodger.
Yeah, I mean, the teams, I mean, he's going to either side with the Dodgers, the Mets, or the Yankees. So, I mean, I mean.
So you're ruling out the Royals, too?
Yes. Breaking news.
Dang it. Alex has ruled out Juan Soto.
The Royals will not be signing Juan Soto. I mean, look, I guess it's great. They called and were like, we just want to make sure, like, hey,
was that number really 600 million?
Do you still want 600 million? Oh, you do. Okay. All right. Thanks. We'll talk to you guys later. I mean, honestly, fine. It's great to call. I mean, maybe it turns out Juan Soto, we didn't know it, has a huge fascination with barbecue and he can't get over enough and he's willing to come here. I don't know. You know, maybe, who knows? Maybe he's actually best friends with Bobby Witt Jr. and is willing to take $300 million less to be best friends. I don't know.
Maybe he wants a shorter contract so he can sign a longer one when all the money goes up. Maybe he just wanted a two-year deal and the Royals will give him that.
I view the Royals clearly having interest is no different than me liking an Instagram post from Sydney Sweeney. Like, I have interest. It doesn't matter. Oh, it doesn't matter. It's not much different.
You think it's as low as you liking Sydney Sweeney's post? And she's like, I wonder who this Alex Gold is who liked this post. Huh? Handsome. Let me see what he's got going on. Oh, Kansas City. I like that city.
That's the same interest in likelihood we're talking about here with Royals and Soto.
I give the Royals slightly better chance than you with Sydney Sweeney, but I get your point.
Well, money's involved in that scenario, so I guess so.
The Royals at least have a 1 in 30 shot or a 1 in... Yeah, a 1 in 30 shot of it.
You do not have a 1 in 30 shot.
You sure?
There are more than 30 people.
You sure?
Before she gets to your name.
Yeah.
Someone says, shoot your shot, man. You know, you never know unless you ask.
That's what the Royals were doing.
That's essentially what they're...
Like, that's what I'm saying. That's what the Royals did.
In this case, though, you got to get in a comment. You can't just like the post. You got to get in a comment and be like, hey, I see you're going to be in KC this weekend. Want to go on a date?
Mm-hmm.
You got to at least propose the question. They called and said, hey, Juan, what are you doing? Hey, how serious is that, you know, $600 million you want? Okay. Mm-hmm. Any budge on there? And they're like, no. Okay. Okay. Just not the Dodgers, man. I just don't think it's fair that the amount of spending, like, it's so disproportionately out of control in baseball that if the Dodgers, after signing a $700 million contract to Shohei Ohtani, back it up with $600 million to Juan Soto, then what are we even doing here? What chance do the Royals really have?
At least at least it would be an NL team. At least I guess I would just say, at least you're talking about a National League team and not an American League team. And certainly it wouldn't be a team in the American League Central putting up that kind of money to get Juan Soto. But don't we all agree it's the Mets, Yankees, or Dodgers? Pretty obvious. I know at one point Boston was in the mix, although I don't know how realistic the Red Sox are. That's also a franchise that was willing to trade away Mookie Betts, for crying out loud.
Fools.
What a disaster that whole trade was. I mean, honestly, one of the worst trades in baseball in the last 30 years.
Yeah, they traded away a future MVP for peanuts.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't even get good players back. Just looking at the text lines, what they're saying.
Yeah.
You know?
People like my comparison.
Someone says, have you thought about not being poor? Have you considered being rich? You know, like a dream board, you know?
Someone says, oh, trust me, there's money involved in both of your examples. Okay, touche. Touche.
Someone says, you were also been in the movies, so you guys have similar interests.
That's right. We're both actors and actresses.
She's
an actress.
You both are in the film industry.
Yeah.
The text line
closing the gap
is comparing you a little bit to Travis Kelce. It said, Travis Kelce shot a shot, and look at him now, Gold.
That's right. That's right. He's provided inspiration to all of us. Thank you, Travis.
Yeah, anything can be possible.
Mm-hmm. And the Royals took that inspiration. They said, we'll shoot our shot as well. We'll call up Scott Boras and just check in and make sure that we weren't way off by $300 or $400 million on what Juan Soto actually wanted.
It would be hilarious if we found out Juan Soto's taking a visit to Kansas City just to look at the facility. He just wants to come out and have a chat.
This goes back to the whole thing I talked about with the Shohei thing. I think I'm dead serious. I think Major League Baseball has to implement a rule where contracts like that aren't possible.
Can't defer 15 years down the road.
I'm sorry.
Bobby Bonilla rule.
It's what makes it possible for them to sign Juan Soto is that they will not pay Shohei Ohtani until he's done playing baseball. That should not that amount of contract. Set a limit. Mm-hmm. 50%, 75%. I don't care. But you cannot allow the Dodgers to essentially pay him league minimum for the next 15 years that he's a superstar MVP and then pay them when their franchise is worth 15 times more and baseball contracts are all of that size and everything in between. It makes the sport even less fair than it already is. Set a limit to the amount a team can defer so they don't run into a situation where they can hand out $1.3 billion worth of contracts in 2 years but pay nobody for 15 years down the road. It just sets up a... It's already a rigged system. Why make it more rigged, I guess?
No, I hear you. The deferred thing is interesting, but much like our conversation yesterday with the TV deals, you know, how do you get the big boys on board with that? The franchises that are willing to defer money down the road like that. Like, anybody can defer a year or two. It's what, but we're talking with the Shohei example. Like, that's something only the Dodgers and Yankees and Mets can do, even deferring money like that to that extent. There's no way these other mid-market teams would ever be able to risk the deferrals for 15 years from now, paying someone that's not on their roster like that. It's one thing if you have to do it for a year or two.
But the Royals can't afford to pay $60 million to Shohei 15 years
from now. No.
But in addition to that, like, you know, like, but they definitely can't afford to do that and pay another, you know, like, it's just silly. Ugh, they just got, I would, if I were baseball owners, I'd be like, ooh, real quick, that's not going to work for us. We got to police this in some capacity. I saw over in the text and someone said, hey, the Giants just got Daniel Jones. We covered that in the first 10 minutes or so. If you want to go back at 10:30, we'll talk about it certainly later in the show as well, because it was surprising news that the Giants did cut Daniel Jones. Still makes absolutely zero sense to me. But, you know, it's hard. This week, I'm more likely to talk Daniel Jones because the Chiefs play the Panthers, and I still think they should blow them out.
Well, I think what you said, it doesn't make any sense. I think, actually, the Daniel Jones cutting makes complete sense.
It's just, I guess I've just never seen a team do it.
I'm surprised they did it, but the reason makes sense. We all know why he got benched. A, performance. B, they don't want to pay him the money with injury guarantee. Mm-hmm. We've seen that before. Why did they cut him? It sounds like they actually might have truly, like, appreciated that he didn't destroy them in his press availability yesterday and was very classy and took the high road. And so they're going to honor that. They're paying him either way. Why make him suffer as the team's for safety? And I understand there's someone out there saying, oh, poor guy, he's going to get $20 million. We're talking still about, in your career, imagine, I don't, you know, no matter what the money is, getting embarrassed. Nobody wants to get embarrassed in what they're doing in any walk of life. And so I get, it's very easy for us on the outside to be like, oh, I'll get embarrassed for $25 million. I get it.
I would too.
But the circumstance where Daniel Jones is in, and when you're an NFL player, you were starting quarterback and all that, it's a little bit different than
your dream almost ends, because he's not going to be a starter again, at least.
He'll have to re-earn it as a backup for some team, or through injury or a million other things. Yeah.
Someone says Royals sign Soto and pay him over the next 50.
Okay. How old would he be? How old would Juan Soto be?
So really, I'm
be?
Just paying his kids at that point. Yeah.
How old would Juan Soto be? 70, 75?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be paying his kids' trust fund at that point.
All right, coming up next, we'll talk some Chiefs football. Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor for Chiefs on SI, we'll ask him if he thinks the limited practice news for both Minshew and Pacheco the last couple days means they're both not available on Sunday. We'll find out next.